WTFR.
Health will never be the same. You're listening to White Wellness with your host, Tabitha.
So as a vegetable, the plant fennel produces an anise-flavored white bulb that is delicious both raw and cooked. As a tea herb, you'll enjoy the tiny yellow seeds. So right here, they're saying in this book, it says, Man is not only the subject of the medicine, but contributes with his body to the materia medica. So they eat a little bit of it unfermented, like regular tofu, but that they eat this fermented tofu, which I saw a picture of it. It kind of had a more of a gelatinous texture and a kind of like a darker kind of tan color. Ovulation rates differ by race, as does the frequency of twins. Black women tend to have shorter cycles than white women do. They often produce two eggs in a single cycle.
And now here's your host, Tabitha.
Greetings and good evening, and greetings and good morning. This is Tabitha, and you are listening to White Wellness. Hello, everybody. So to continue the, the trend that I did the week before and the week before that, I want to continue dissecting vegetableism, or what most people know as veganism, and how this affects us and how it works into the whole tranny, humanism, Abrahamic filth agenda. So to start off, I wanted to talk a little bit about New Zealand and how that relates to veganism, especially since I want to make sure I include everybody when I talk about different topics of these in regards to diet and things like that, all parts of the world. So I found this article and says that New Zealand, I think, is like the number one country when it comes to the push for all this veganism. So let's just take a gander at this article. New Zealand's health ministry says, go vegan for the planet. So now they're getting this whole climate change thing. Just like all these countries of white Western civilization are getting this treatment. New Zealand Ministry of Health has encouraged residents to eat more vegan and vegetarian food in a bid to reduce the health sector's carbon footprint. So this time around, with this whole agenda, they're tying it to carbon footprint, which I've been doing for a while, but this is an easy way for people to feel guilty and to get them to eat, well, total slop. So here is the story. A new report by the Ministry of Health encourages New Zealand residents to eat more vegan and vegetarian food to reduce the carbon footprint. The report uncovered various avenues that can be taken to improve the environmental impact of the health sector, including using less electricity. Agriculture is a major source of greenhouse gas emissions. Well, if you're doing it wrong, of course it is, the Zogwe. According to the Ministry for the Environment, it accounts for 49% of the country's greenhouse gas emissions. So again, using all the themes of, you know, CAFO and factory farm to basically set the stage for all types of agriculture, not regenerative agriculture, because they never talk about that, because that would blow their agenda right out of the water. So it's getting the push here, and they're trying to blend it in with the whole climate change thing, trying to get people to feel guilty that way, using these buzzwords such as plant-based, cruelty-free lifestyle, all of this stuff. And in another article, that was just a random tidbit, but New Zealand ranks third in the world for veganism. That's right, not first, third. First on this list would be Australia. They're getting it the most out of all the countries, and those countries are as follows: Australia number one, United Kingdom number two, New Zealand three, Sweden four, Canada five, Use for Hell, or what some people know as Israel, number six, United States of America number seven, Ireland number eight, Austria number nine, and Germany number 10. So, of course, with the exception of Use for Hell, all of those countries are countries of white Western civilization, and of course they are pushing it very much here. I don't see them pushing this in China, Nigeria, any of these non-white countries. They're only pushing it in our countries. As the price of meat and dairy continue to soar, a new wave of veganism looks to be on the horizon for New Zealand. And that's not necessarily true. I don't know what the meat prices are technically like in New Zealand, but it can be very cost effective to eat animal foods. You don't have to say, oh, I'm doing it for my wallet, because plenty of this vegan food is pretty expensive. Kiwi appetites for plant-based diets are growing so much that vegan product suppliers are even struggling to keep up with the demand. It also appears that our hunger for plant-based cuisine is making waves around the globe, making us one of the most popular countries for veganism. And they placed fourth in 2017, but I guess it's moving up in rank over here. And they have a lot of new restaurants opening up in New Zealand as well. And a lot of the searches and search engines are getting higher using the word vegan in New Zealand as well. And all the top cities in the world as well that are known for veganism, they are also in white Western civilization. And those would be in the UK, Canada, and US. And those cities would be Bristol, UK, Portland, US, Edinburgh, UK, Scotland, Vancouver, California, Seattle, US, Manchester, UK, London, UK, Leeds, UK, Los Angeles, America, and Glasgow, UK, in Scotland. So again, targeting white Western civilization, not targeting China, you know, Africa, South America. Nope. It's a target for us, and we, of all the races out there, are the least suitable for it. We are the least suited for a vegan diet. So, of course, they would be pushing it on us because this is part of their demoralization and genocide agenda. So now on to something that kind of deviates a wee bit from the theme of vegetableism. And this is a story about drag queens. I guess this kind of fits into the whole thing because veganism is a transgender nutritional ideology. So this all fits into the same type of thing. At least it does for me. So I found this story, and it was about some university students that were, quote, in hot water for publicly shaming a drag queen. And the funny thing about this, or kind of the ironic thing about it, is that the students who were involved in, quote, the shaming, they're actually part of a liberal national party in Queensland, Australia. So it was a group on the left, or a liberal or a democratic group, that was shaming these drag queens. And something else I should add, too, I just found out today that one of the students that was engaged in this protest, a gay or a homosexual student, a male, he is now dead. He's Catholic and homosexual, according to this article, 21 years old. He supposedly died of suicide. So that seems a little on the suspicious side to me. And what they did is they went into... what do? They went into a public library. That's right. And they were chanting, drag queens are not for kids. And the name of this drag queen who was there reading this book, her name, or his, excuse me, was Diamond Goodrim. And that to me sounds like that's an analingus or a sodomy type of name. So of what person reading to children or adults would want to go by that name? That's disgusting unto itself. So, Sean, whenever you're ready, if you could please play this drag queen clip.
Protesters from the UQ National Liberals Club have unleashed a homophobic tirade against drag queens during a children's storytime event. Let's go live to Brendan Smith at Queensland State Parliament. Brendan, the group of young people are saying they were defending LNP values.
Yeah, that's right. But since then, the LNP says it's actually severed ties with that group as late as last year, saying that the tirade yesterday does not represent any values or ideals that the LNP does. This UQ Liberal National Club stormed the drag queen story time at the Brisbane City Council Library in Brisbane Square yesterday afternoon, chanting at two drag queens who were hosting the event for a number of families and children yesterday afternoon, really getting in the face of one of those drag queens. Here's a little of what happened.
Drag queens are not for kids.
Now, this group, they've been labelled bigots, homophobes and bullies. Even the federal member for Brisbane, Trevor Evans, who is an openly gay man, has taken to social media calling these people ratbags and saying that they wouldn't know LNP values if they fell over them. We actually heard from one of the drag queens, Johnny Valkyrie, who spoke to Channel 7 earlier this morning.
These students came into the library and put children, families, the staff and the public in the line of conflict and in the line of vilification. This transcends politics. This is not about politics. This is about humanity. And all I have to say is love and respect will prevail.
Now, the LNP has also said on Twitter, Tim Mander, rather, has said that this group is also using the LNP brand without permission. So clearly they're very keen to distance themselves from this group, given that the state election is less than a year away. Tom, we know that last year the young LNP on the Gold Coast was embroiled in another scandal. This time it was a racist scandal, which showed a video of a number of members smirking at a racist slur which was made against Aboriginal people. So this today is simply just another scandal the LNP is keen to quash very quickly.
Okay, that was the end of that. I just smirking at a slur. That's considered racist. Okay, anyway, that was a ridiculous clip, but it's nice to see a little bit of a bite back from people with this. And just the fact that it's a liberal school group, that's good too, because usually this falls under kind of the more of the left side, even though plenty of, you know, people on the right are into the whole tranny and drag queen culture as well. So, but still, it's good to see some type of, you know, protest. And Set Free is saying they have been wanting to bring them here and to the public library for story times, getting really crazy as hell here. Yeah, it has not happened in my area yet. Very thankful for that. But, you know, I often wonder, I've had this conversation with other people, what they would do. You think the town would be like, this is not flying. But I could see it, people being annoyed by it, you know, and they have every right to be annoyed at it. What else did I want to say about this article? Yeah, here was a funny quote, something that I thought was rather telling that I saw on the YouTube comments for this video, and someone posted, it said, safe schools, and that's in parentheses, equals LGBT activism under the guise of an anti-bullying program, always an agenda. Drag queens carefully selected stories to small children equals normalizing queerness and gender fluidity. Drag queens are scary to children as they look slash behave like histrionic creepy clowns. And histrionic is a type of personality disorder. It's a cluster B. Social engineering shoved down kids' throats is child abuse, and these uni students should have freedom of speak. Yes, I agree with that commenter. Pretty crazy. But like I said, nice to see a bit of a bit of people not taking this sitting down or standing down. And of course, they use all their language, homophobic, bigot, you know, racist. They would have thrown that one in too. If the drag queen happened to be black, they would have thrown racist in there, or, you know, some other non-white race, whatever. They're always using their word salad to demoralize and dehumanize people. Nothing new there. That's all I wanted to say about that story. And this drag queen story hour thing, I guess, has been slowly brewing for the last, I don't even know how long it's been, 5-7 years. But like everything else in the last 5 to 10 years, 7 years, it's really gotten terribly out of hand. All right, so on to the next thing. I want to talk a little bit about pasture-raised meat, which I've talked about before in the past on other shows, but nevertheless, always good to have a refresher course in this. So like I said, this show is going to focus around dissecting vegetableism, but also giving us solutions, ways that we can be better and eat better. Because once we know what's not good for us, we want to say, well, what should we be eating? So here is an article about 6 reasons why you should eat pasture-raised in 2020. And number 1 is that it's better for the animals. Industrialized animal agriculture made meat production efficient, inexpensive, and consistent. It quickly became a successful program because it made its products cost-effective and uniform. This industrialization accomplished these goals by putting animals' instinctive behavior as a second, third, or fourth priority, as opposed to making it the core value. The production of true pasture-raised animals is inarguably a better life for the animals. Cattle are born to roam and graze, chickens are hatched to scratch and peck, and hogs are born to root and wallow. If you want to improve the lives of animals, you must start by consistently supporting the systems which embrace a pasture-based production. And that is definitely true. And oftentimes we forget about how the simple, easy way is the way that's often the best way. But of course, when all these vegetableist people are giving you pamphlets or, you know, counter arguments to what you have to say, they never mention regenerative agriculture, because then the cat would be out of the bag. You would know that they were completely full of it, and that they were blowhards, and that they were either slaves or shills, essentially. Number two, it's better for the land. Through holistic management, animals have the ability to positively impact the soil in a powerful way. Pasture-raised production soils use animals like tools on a tool belt to speed up the photosynthetic process, disrupt the soil, and fertilize the soil through urination and defecation. Sounds a bit, not too appetizing, but nevertheless, this is the cycle. Through holistic management, the soil feeds the grasses feed the livestock, and the livestock in turn feed the grasses. It's all part of the birth, life, death, decay process that applies to humans, plants, animals, and everything on our planet. And that's that Kundalini cycle that's known as Sa, Ta, Na, Ma. Life or birth, life, death, and decay or rebirth. That's the cycle. That's how it's done. But of course, when you use something like CAFO, you know, concentrated animal feeding operations, you know, battery farming, that's zagriculture. I would refer to it as that. That could be a new word for the non-fictionary, but agriculture should really only be reserved that word when speaking about regenerative or holistic management. The rest is zagriculture. Regenerative land management practices have been shown to sequester more carbon in the soil than pasture-raised animals emit in their lifetimes. Carbon-negative beef is a new potential tool to help reverse climate change, or what they're telling us is climate change. And these regenerative practices can even be applied to the solar power industry. But the enemy wants you to think that by eating all these plant foods, especially these tranny burgers, that that's going to help with all this stuff. And it's not. Those things are terrible for the environment. It's pure propaganda and lies. By supporting pasture-raised production systems, you are endorsing systems that are focused on making global generational improvements to the land we occupy, as opposed to quarterly quotas and goals. And also you're supporting something that's better, you know, it's better for everyone than a CAFO or a battery operated factory farm. Number three, it's better for our community. Rural America was devastated by the effects of industrial zagriculture. Because of the mechanization after World War II, efficiencies were introduced into agriculture that displaced jobs and dismantled those thriving little towns. Pasture-raised production systems are part of a change that puts this thoughtful labor back into agriculture. By doing this, quality jobs are created, traditional skills are restored, very important, and citizens are provided with opportunities that didn't exist at one time. Pasture-raised production systems reverse the mass exodus of hardworking people and reestablish small, sustainable communities. And the money can go back into that community as opposed to feeding Zog. Number four, it's better for the people. Industrial meat production has been faulted for creating jobs that require constant, repetitive actions, which lead to multiple health issues for the employees. In pasture-raised production systems, employees wear many different hats and perform various tasks each day. Also sounds a lot more stimulating and exciting and better for the body. Employees who work in environments that offer diverse, I hope that's diverse and not diverse, diverse tasks are happier and healthier. Pasture-raised production systems regularly present employees with challenges, opportunities, and accomplishments that are physically and emotionally rewarding. Not only that, but locally owned and operated processing businesses based on pasture-raised production systems reverse the growth of multinational megaplants by keeping dollars in a in the community, pasture-raised production systems are helping to bring a little more prosperity to rural America, which is very important because a lot of farmers have been impoverished by zagriculture, by zog. So it's really important to support rural America. Number five, it's better for you. It's inarguable that animals raised in industrial production systems are less healthy than those raised in a natural pasture-raised production system. Why would we believe that meat from those unhealthy animals would then be a nutritious option for our families to consume? There is documented research in Circulation that states pasture-raised proteins are now being used in preventative health care and in treatment plans for illnesses. Another thing, of course, vegans will never tell you. They'll just give you all the information about meat based on CAFO or factory farming. It's time to realize that nutritious food truly is medicine. It absolutely is. Switching to pasture-raised meats doesn't have to be difficult. And there's numerous things that you can try. You can do, you know, ground beef for hamburgers. You can try, you know, with eggs, sausage, bacon. There are millions of products that are available in pastured form if you like it and you want to find like a product to cross over to something that's better for you and for the environment. Truly, not in the way that, you know, other ideologies and nature isn't an ideology. It's just a way. It's like what they call the dough or the way. This isn't like some trend that's just going to make some fat cat with a hook nose a lot of money. It's better than fake meat, or it's better than tranny meat. As the debate over how to approach climate change continues, some industrialized agriculture products made in a lab have claimed to be the future of meat. Some fake meat companies claim they are a better choice for the environment. Lies. However, as third-party scientific life cycle assessments have shown, many trendy plant-based proteins are contributing to climate change, while pasture-raised cattle can help reverse it. Managing grazing practices with ruminants changed the debate from plant v. meat to industrial v. regenerative. Grass-fed cattle are not simply the choice of less harm, like a burger made of soy or peas. And of course, they're giving us an emotional argument. Again, they always play on our emotions. Regenerative pasture-raised animals regenerate the land, sequester carbon, and benefit biodiversity, all while creating good-paying jobs in rural communities. In the words of Will Harris, and this is from a place called White Oak Pastures in Georgia. I recently tried some of their meat. He said, "It's not the cow, it's the how." That's a nice little phrase right there. And this is a farm, White Oak Pastures. They are in Georgia. They are in, let's see what area, just to let everybody know. This is Georgia in the States. They are in Bluffton, Georgia, and I recently tried some of their products. So far, I've had their chicken. I've had their pastured chicken. What did I make so far? I made some roasted chicken breasts. I made a chicken stock. And, oh, I've had these little patties, these little sausage patties in the morning that I got from them. They're just meat, and I form it into sausages. But so far, everything I've had has been good. I've been enjoying trying a new company, and nice to get the stuff directly from a farm, because in other instances where I've utilized an online purveyor for these types of products, not all the time, but in certain instances, I've gotten it from a place that was kind of like a hub for, you know, grass-fed wild stuff from different parts. But this is all grown on one farm. And it's a 150-year-old family farm in Bluffton, Georgia, six generations. So this is the type of place that I definitely feel really good about supporting since 1866, because these people are really doing it right. They're not doing zagriculture. They're doing real farming. So that's all I wanted to say about why we should eat pastured meat. And I've definitely been enjoying these foods. They're really good. You know, you can always try something. If you don't like something, you can try something else. You know, have fun with it. Don't beat yourself up when it comes to food. So many people beat themselves up about food, and that doesn't really help anybody. Okay, so the next thing I wanted to do is I have a couple of audio clips, more than the one we had just played, and I have an audio clip about bad vegan advice. And this stuff that falls under the header of bad vegan advice is, well, it's mind-boggling to say the least. It's really just unbelievable. And it's all this sugar-based, insane, Abrahamic, Judaized ideology, absolutely crazy, totally against nature. I mean, I watched this video, and you guys are going to hear the audio, and the audio is really the best part. Of course, you can go and watch the video, and you see these people who are making these banana shakes. These are the people who are doing more of a frugivorous or a raw food thing, even though people who don't necessarily do a regime that's wholeheartedly frugivorous or raw, they will still be making these shakes if they're doing whatever, you know, version they're doing, if it's like a high carbohydrate one, which is just so bad for the liver. Brain does not run on sugar. It runs on fat, like me and Mike discussed on a show that will be, I think, uploaded pretty soon. Just put that out there. We did a little Saturday night special together talking about tranny meat and the whole dialectic between vegan and carnivore and all that. So be sure to check that out when that is on the website. But yeah, some of these people are making these shakes where they put bananas, or bananas, as they say in certain parts of the world, in a blender with water, and then they just start pouring in sugar. Yeah. It looks like a drug addict is making themselves a meal. It's absolutely mind-boggling. So, Sean, whenever you're ready, let's see if we have enough time for this clip. I think we do. Do we have enough time? If not, I don't know how long the clip is. Let me just check, because we're actually coming into a break in just a moment. Okay, I think we will wait on that clip until we get back. But yeah, it just shows this terrible, terrible advice that these people are doling out. And there's so many people on YouTube, on a lot of these websites, just doling out the worst advice. I mean, the worst advice. It's just unbelievable. And we all want to believe something that someone has to say, but a lot of people just don't know. Unfortunately. Yes, yes, Sean.
You know, you're good to go for the clip. You'll make it, no problem. It's only 2 minutes and 11 seconds.
I will. Okay, then please play it. Yeah.
Okay. It's about to...
If you mix wheatgrass about 55% with about 45% coconut water, just this water that we have right here and there, you have something that's basically a blood transfusion. Advantage of a long body of knowledge about coconuts, which has stated that coconuts can be used, the water can be used straight into our blood.
So I would say Sprite, in my opinion, in my experience, reading comments, is it's definitely a health food. There you go, put it on record. Durinata says Sprite is a health food in 2016.
So my number one tip is you have to eat a high-carb, low-fat, plant-based vegan diet. No overt fats, very low in fat. I usually eat under 10 grams of fats a day. Sugar, in my opinion, is the best dietary supplement. Add sugar to your smoothies and juices. High carb, focusing on fruit, rice, sugar as the main source of your calories. Or keeping your belly nice and flat, just a reminder. Sign up for my coaching group if you would like some help.
Where do you get your protein? Huh? Tim, where do you get your protein? Where do you get your protein? I don't get my protein. But why am I 15 pounds overweight? Because I have too much muscle. I build muscle without doing anything. What I'm getting are amino acids in the form of enzymes. Any fresh fruit or vegetable is full of enzymes. Enzymes are amino acids. You don't need protein.
You want to add refined sugar to your whole foods, to your fruit. You don't listen to fucking anyone else but us, Julia. You listen to me, you listen to Freely, everyone else is white noise.
But they are people from this community.
Doesn't matter, you listen to the directors. Mm. Listen to the king and queen.
You're not going to get every single vitamin and nutrient every single day, but like in the long run, you'll probably be fine as long as you're eating like a pretty well-balanced diet. You're going to be okay. Just like do your normal blood tests and take your prenatal vitamins and yeah, just enjoy your pregnancy and relax and eat what you want to eat.
Okay, that was the end of that. I couldn't hold back my laughter at that point when that guy was saying that enzymes were amino acids and he didn't need protein. But we'll talk a little bit more about that when we get back. Okay.
The following advertisement is brought to you by a non-paid, non-crisis actor on WTFR Radio.
Hi, I am Mike Sledge, and I am not a Klansman or a neo-Nazi, but I consider myself a real white nationalist, and I highly recommend as part of your regime to listen to WTFR at least 7 days a week to build up those hate muscles so you can be ready for the electric boogaloo. WTFR, where thought is first.
Remember the way that you love me. So go shadow.
And we are back. And just before the break, we played a little clip called Bad Vegan Advice, where we heard these people just doling out the most ridiculous zogwash about how a proper diet is fruit, rice, and sugar, not to have any protein whatsoever. I mean, just absolutely insane. And these people all looked like hell, by the way. I know you guys couldn't see that, but let me just drop the link in the chat in case anyone wants to see the exact video that I watched. But yeah, these people do not look well, and I'm not surprised, because how could you look well when you're eating unwell? But this is, I played some clips from the same fellow last week. He goes by Vegan Panic, phobic rather, I guess Panic too, that's a pretty good name, on YouTube, and makes a lot of just short but succinct videos highlighting just the mental illness of veganism. It's a sugar plantation cult. I think I saw someone at some point refer to it on YouTube. Sugar cult plantation. That's it. Something like that. It is. And who is known for running the sugar trade, right? Wasn't it the Jews that ran that? Another topic that I talked a little bit with Mike about on that little Saturday night special. So they were not only running the slave trade, but the sugar trade. So wouldn't it behoove the same parasite to be pushing this agenda under the guise of health to us, right? I certainly think so. And Set Free is saying in the chat, people and kids better wake up. YouTube or YuckTube and others leaving bad info up and sick stuff and dumping real news and info that's good. Yeah, of course. They really want to entrench us with all the stuff that's deleterious to our health while not showing the stuff it is, or embedding it and hiding it in a way so we can't find it. Very disgusting, but can't be surprised that they would do that. And diet's no different. It's become a huge dialectic. And the more information that's out there that's bad, it makes it harder for us to find the good stuff. And it also makes it harder for us to even remember a time when things were simple. Years ago, when no one was obsessed with all this stuff. Now everyone's obsessed with what they're eating, right? I mean, the idea of just eating a normal diet is, it doesn't exist anymore. No one eats like that. Everyone's on some type of plan, buying something, taking something. It's just a waste. If we could just all get back to our roots and just learn how to cook, eat normally, and that would be a really good thing to do, as opposed to falling prey for a lot of this bad advice. And I've been there. I've fallen prey to some of this stuff. And, you know, it stinks. It really does. But I guess it's part of the process in a certain way. But more and more, especially current day, there's more of this dialectic. There's more bad information, even than there was 2 or 3 years ago. They're really pushing for this hard. And this vegan agenda is something that they've rolled out, like I talked about in last week's show with Mike, but also in other shows. They've done this before. The whole low-fat 90s thing that they did with the snack wells and everything, that's no different than what they're doing now with this vegetabilistic, the Mediterranean diet. That was mostly a vegetabilist diet. So they've been rolling this out, calling it something else many a times, always trying to package it up and make it look glitzy so we'll fall for it the next time. Don't fall for it. So now to switch gears a little bit, I wanted to talk about one of the blue zones. And the blue zones are the areas in the world where they have the most amount of longevity. I'm sure, like I've said in prior shows, that there are other areas where a populace is experiencing longevity. They just aren't documented. So there are five documented blue zones. That would be Sardinia, Italy, Ikaria, Greece, Nicoya, Costa Rica, Loma Linda, California, and Okinawa, Japan, which we spoke about on last week's show. And there is a lot of filthy propaganda out there in regards to the blue zones, trying to point it off as a mostly plant-based diet. That is not true. What's even more hogwashian is that a lot of vegans will tout the blue zone diets as reasons for why a vegan diet is good when these people don't practice a vegan diet, whether you're reading the propagandized version, which is the one that's limited meat, or you're getting to the real version, which has way more meat than they're really telling you the truth about. So this article just features Sardinia, which of course would be the Sardinian cuisine, which would be different than other parts of the blue zones. And here is a little bit about this. Fascinating information about how we're really supposed to eat and just how these people eat, how they eat a tasty, good food. And here is what Sean is saying in the chat. We need to get back to our roots indeed and tear into a gazelle that was cooked on a spit. Tinia wants it. She told me she is really not a flat earther or a vegan that looks like a young boy. She says she only practices because it brings them an audience. I mean, what type of people would want to be associated with something that's against nature? I just don't get it. I just don't. Like, even in the days when I was leaning more towards eating that style of diet, I still never bought the vegan thing. I just didn't. It just seemed so imbalanced is, I guess, the best way that I could describe it. And coming from the background that I came from, I didn't come from a background where it was all about macronutrients and micronutrients and vitamins and minerals and, you know, all that type of stuff, foods to, you know, what food grouping, all that type of stuff, and calories, all this, what I consider useless zogwash nutrition. I came more from a background of energetics. Like, what's the energy of this food? How is it going to change if I cut it differently? If I cook it, if I don't cook it, if I ferment it, if I add salt? So that's the background that I came from, kind of like more of that alchemical background of that's familiar to most people, probably from an Ayurvedic or a traditional Chinese medicinal perspective. So that's how I kind of came into my beliefs with food. It wasn't through all this kind of more Abrahamic conditioning of calories, macronutrients, like worrying, obsessing in a kind of like a crazed mathematical sense over just numbers. Nobody in nature, you think any animal or person in nature has even had a thought about a calorie? I doubt it. That's a ridiculous thing to even obsess about. They're wondering what's in this, what the energy is, how they can pair it with something else and how it works. That's how we should be approaching food. We shouldn't be approaching it with, oh, how many grams of so-and-so is in this? I mean, come on. That is so lame. So lame. And I think that that also helps feed or foster obsessive behavior about food, which is what they want. They want us to obsess about everything. And then that could lead on to things like disordered eating or a full-blown eating disorder. And veganism oftentimes is a mask for an eating disorder with the guise of being healthy. And it's far from it. So back to this article about Sardinia. So let's see. Okay, so of course, they've already kind of pushed, like I said, a diet that they tell you it's 85-15. They tell you it's 85 plant-based, 15 animal. They tell you that for all of the blue zones. So here to continue the article. So there is a book, and I have this book. The book that promulgates this point of view, and that's the one of being the 85-15, that type of thing, is The Blue Zones, Lessons for Living Longer from the People Who Lived the Longest by Dan Buettner. And I bought this book, or I got it somewhere secondhand a while ago. Based on several articles published in the National Geographic, Buettner opens up a lot of creaky gates and visits a number of dimly lit bars to explore several blue zones. known for a large number of centenarians, long-lived people who invariably have wrinkly smiles and live fairly isolated, physically active, low-stress lives. And of course, one of the things I always notice in these articles, that even in the ones that give the real deal information in regards to their diet, they never mention something that I think definitely works into this whole formula for why these people have such good health. They never mention that these people are living in monoracial societies. They never point that out. As for the diet, Buettner gives you bottom line in chapter one. It includes suggestion to eat 6 to 9 servings of vegetables and to make sure your meat is lean. And that is not accurate. That's not how Blue Zone people eat. Lean meat is a modern day phenomenon. The best diet is basically one of moderation, and we hear this hogwash over and over again. You hear about all these people that live on legumes and plant foods, and that's probably okay, but I don't think it's necessary. One certainly can metabolize a certain amount of meat, but again, it's a question of are you eating European portions or American portions? So again, they're mixing all this in. Are you eating meat a couple of times a week, or are you eating it every day, 2 meals a day? Are you eating processed meats that are filled with fat, or are you eating good cuts with fairly lean meat? And see how they do that right there? They associate processed meats with fat, or eating the good cuts that are fairly lean, saying that processed meat is bad, and then attaching the fat to it, making you think that fat is bad. Buettner's first example of a blue zone is the mountainous Babagia region of the province of Oligastra on the island of Sardinia. A paper given at the Longevity Conference in 1999 found that, for example, 7 centenarians in a village of 2,500 people, ratios were confirmed in later studies. In the U.S., about only 1 in 20,000 reaches the age of 100. So that's pretty good odds right there for Sardinia. Barbagia is characterized by rough pasture land with patches of hardwood forest and occasional vineyards. Like other blue zones, the region was relatively isolated until recent times. And that's another reason why they were basically able to stay so healthy, is that they were isolated. Barbagia is a difficult place, says Buettner. People eke out a living from a rugged land by raising sheep and goats. So just, you know, living off the land, having a very traditional life, very different life than probably a lot of us do. The residents there have a reputation for kidnapping, stealing, and settling scores at the end of very long knives. A vendetta can last generations. A son of one family might get shot today for something his father did decades ago. If a boy catches you looking at his girl, expect to be confronted. Everyone in Barbagia has a knife in his pocket. Knife-wielding peasants carrying grudges seem to contract the notion that life in Barbagia is stress-free, but we digress. Back to the diet. Their Sardinian diet was lean and largely plant-based, is what Buettner insists. With an emphasis on beans, whole wheat, and garden vegetables, wine, goat milk, and mastic oil. So that's what they're telling you, but that's not true. So my first question is this: what is mastic oil? According to my findings in the brief internet search, mastic oil comes from a tree that's related to the pistachio, which actually produces a resin called mastic. It's not an edible oil, but they're making it seem, of course, in this literature that it is edible. Mastic has medicinal and industrial uses as an additive to perfume, cosmetics, soap, body oils, and lotions. They use it as a substitute for olive oil, he's saying, which I guess is also not true because it's not an edible oil. Buettner first alerts the alert and chipper Giuseppe Mora, age 102, whose whole house smells vaguely of sausages and red wine. Does the house smell of sausages because Mora eats sausage? We never find out. Gosh, here is a wonderful opportunity to ask a non-senile centenarian whether he has eaten foods like sausages over the years. After all, wouldn't it be good to know whether our centenarian peasant has enjoyed processed meats filled with fat throughout his long life? Instead, Buettner asks questions from the National Institute of Aging, non-leading questions carefully crafted to tease out the lifestyle by eliciting a narrative. Ridiculous. So, of course, basically avoiding it. Buettner's meal at the house of Giuseppe Mora includes this: wine with cured ham, followed by cups of hot coffee. But according to Buettner's carefully crafted questions, the centurion's diet consists largely of fava beans, pecorino cheese, bread, and meat as he could afford it. So this guy's basically making up information to fill this book. And it's not to say that he doesn't eat those other foods, but they're making it look like they just eat a small piece of meat. Wouldn't you think if this was a pasture land place where people are making their living as being sheep and goat herders, that their diet is probably going to be substantially higher than, let's say, a lot of other people in sheep and goat meat and sheep and goat dairy? But of course, they have an agenda, and they want you to think that that's not true, which is makes sense that they'd want to do something like this. Okay, let's continue a little bit with the article. Yeah, so basically this guy is eating preserved meat, not preserved meat and like the idea of eating something nasty like a hot dog, but he's preserving his own meat. He's making his own charcuterie if he's making his own sausage. And charcuterie is a French word for the subset of culinary arts, which is all about making sausages and all different types of, cured and salted and preserved meats. So the next fellow that they meet in Sardinia drinks goat milk for breakfast, I'm assuming it's raw, and carries bread, cheese, wine, sheep's milk, and roasted lambs on journeys. No fava beans for him. See? So again, you can see that this guy was lying, basically pushing propaganda, was probably told to go there and to make up these stories and to embellish what they were eating and to play down what they were truly eating and to kind of play down what they weren't. And here it says that Sardinians do drink a lot of wine. I've heard the men sometimes will drink wine throughout the whole day, a small little glass, and they'll just tipple on that the whole day, starting like, in the morning around 9 or so, and just keep, 9:30, and just keep on sipping on it the whole day. So this is basically a shepherd's diet. And they're basically saying, too, that they were eating high levels of vegetable proteins. And that's not true, because they are shepherds, and that is what they do, and that's what they have an abundance of. Not to say they don't eat these other foods. They do. They eat fava beans, white beans, chickpeas, lentils, chestnuts, walnuts, all this types of stuff. But the crux of the diet seems to be the animal foods. They also eat some potatoes, and they make a pork stock, and they make a sour cheese, for a fresh sour cheese called casu adedo, which is rich in lactobacilli. And they also eat organs too. They also eat organ meats, which is something else that's not talked about in the Blue Zones. Yep. And here they show a picture of two Sardinian ladies with some bread called carta de musica, which is a very thin kind of papery bread. But the rest of the picture has all types of cured meats, olives, cheese, all this types of stuff. So oftentimes when they're reporting on these diets, they're lying to you. They're lying about what, quote, the healthiest people in the world eat. And they are the healthiest people in the world, but they're lying about, quote, the healthiest diet is what I should say. Not surprised. I mean, there's so much of this. It just takes a lot of time to kind of ferret through this and to see all the stuff that they are really eating as opposed to what they say they are eating. And this whole Blue Zones thing, this is a big moneymaker. There's a Blue Zones website. There's all this information about it. This is a huge way for them to make money, to push an unnatural diet, to push a lie, to push all of this stuff on us under the guise of using some fake history. It's ridiculous, and it's about time that it gets exposed. Okay, so that's all I wanted to say about Sardinia, but kind of cool. I've never been there, but it seems like a very interesting place with interesting food and interesting people. And of course, since it's an island that's away from mainland Italy, or the main, main area of like Italy and Sicily, which are more closely connected, the cuisine is a little bit more different, more, more regional. And they're also sequestered in their own area, so they kind of look a little bit different, and they've kind of had this longevity. The same way, I guess you could say, for the Okinawan people, who are also been on their own island, who have been, more segregated, a little different looking than other Japanese people, bit different of a diet. So this is what happens when you have a populace that just stays somewhere and keeps a very traditional, very monoracial type of a lifestyle. It's interesting to kind of see how different it is with the ones that don't and the ones that have more city areas and how that affects, well, everything. Okay. So the next clip I wanted to play is going to be a clip. This is from the same fellow whose name is Vegan Phobic. And this is a very interesting set of clips. And it's all about vegans talking about how much they hate humans, how much they hate, I guess, people. And I'm supposing that they are people, some of them. I don't know if they all are. But they just go on and on about how much they hate humanity. And you can see that when someone is really malnourished and in a state of deep mental illness, of course they're going to hate humans. And I'm sure there's a lot of self-loathing that goes into those feelings of hating humans, right? It's kind of weird to hate humans. I mean, certain humans are, I use that word loosely, they are abominations and they are very unsavory. But to hate all of humanity, I don't know. I think that's stretching it a bit. So Sean, whenever you're ready, please play this vegan anti-human audio.
I hate all groups of humans. The only thing that for my matter, for me, myself, the animals. I want to say that I hate humans and I don't harm them. And let me not forget, people that eat meat, dairy and egg, they've been the most violent people on this planet. Of pure, 100% evil behavior.
So in summary, I myself am a misanthrope. I despise the human species as a whole. I'm sure most of us can agree, vegans, vegetarians, and meat eaters, that humans are undoubtedly an evil species. So instead, they pay someone else to do the exact same. And those actions are passively evil. Us vegans have total empathy for the victims. We have zero empathy for the victimizers.
I think that human beings are the worst species on the planet and don't benefit the planet in any way, shape or form. In fact, if you took humans out of the planet would actually thrive a lot better than when the humans were on it. Animals would thrive without us. We are the cancer of the planet. I am ashamed to be a human being. We need to treat the pigs, the cows, the hens with compassion, you know? The best way to do that is to go vegan.
I'm a misanthrope. I hate all human beings. All humans are a psychotic scourge to this planet.
And for those watching who think that, oh, it's extreme that people should be sterilized by birth, like, just to let you know, like, my views a little bit on it, like, I cannot personally think of a non-selfish reason to have a child. Like, I don't want to have someone look exactly like me or have my eyes, if anything. That's kind of a little bit creepy.
Who claim that I support rape because I wished it, and I repeat, wished it upon men and women who actually support rape and murder by draping themselves in fur coats.
And people that wear furs should be raped.
I wish evil things happen to evil people. I don't understand why my wishes are worse than people's actions.
Mm.
People that eat meat, dairy, and eggs. People that wear fur coats.
I hope that sons accidentally shoot their fathers on hunting excursions, while carnivores suffer heart attacks that kill them slowly. Every woman ensconced in fur should endure a rape so vicious that it scars them forever, while every man entrenched in fur should suffer an anal raping so horrific that they become disemboweled.
And yes, it does include family members of mine who actually continue eating meat and dairy. They've watched Earthlings, they know the facts, they've been educated, but they choose to continue eating animal products. Whether they actually deserve to continue living.
I honestly think everyone should be sterilized at birth. That's, you know, my view on things.
Veganism has nothing to do with health. Veganism only has something to do with animal rights and has nothing to do with health.
In fact, I'm a pretty hardcore anti-natalist. FYI, that's someone who doesn't
who is morally against human reproduction because of the damage it causes to the earth, to animals, and to ourselves. Basically, there are no objective, identifiable reasons to reproduce your own children on this planet. Therefore, I am against it.
And that's where this whole militant vegan frustration stems from.
Shit's about to...
Okay, and that was the end of that clip. Pretty sick stuff right there. That man talking about how people who eat animal foods or wear fur should be raped. Talking about how a woman should be raped so she never forgets it. Talking about how a man should be raped so that he's disemboweled and has intestinal damage. These people are extremely sick. Extremely sick. These people are basically rooting or cheering on the demise of humanity. These people are cheering on white genocide. These people are genocidal. They're putting the beliefs of their ridiculousness over everything else, over survival, because their own survival is gone. They've lost all their own will to survive and all their wit. So they're trying to take it away from other people and to possibly harm them. I mean, really, really, really sick stuff. I don't think they're college professors set free. I just think these are a bunch of just retards, honestly. People who are just sick, dealing with malnutrition. What else can I say besides that covers a lot of stuff. When someone's malnourished, I mean, you see a lot of results from malnourishment. It manifests in a lot of different ways depending on the person, depending on the type of malnourishment. Yeah, that's definitely a part of it. I think oftentimes they will lash out at people who are nourished. And they're also, this is another interesting point, they're always pointing the finger at people who eat meat and saying, you know, you're a vampire, you're a murderer, you're, you know, this, this, and this. You're one step away from cannibalism. This is the type of stuff that they say. And of course, they never use logic. They're always going for a character assassination or, you know, calling people names. Very lowbrow type of low vibrational behavior. You know, a normal person would have a conversation where they'd be able to debate you and they wouldn't raise their voice. You know, they would be normal, but these people aren't normal because they're mentally ill and they're malnourished. And in a way, these people are the most cannibalistic people, which I know sounds kind of like it's hard to see on the outside of this. But what I'm trying to say is that when you're depriving yourself of animal fat and animal muscle, your body's going to go into an auto cannibal state where you're going to be feeding on your own muscle and feeding on your own fat. That's why a lot of these people look so bad. They've lost all the collagen, all the fat in their face. They look incredibly old, and they've lost all their muscle tone, so they're experiencing muscle wasting. It's bad. Okay, we'll be right back, everybody.
We are the music makers, and we are the dreamers of dreams.
Inductive logic. Reasoning from specific instances to a general conclusion that is broader than what can be logically inferred from the instances. For example, our observation that the sun rose today, yesterday, and all the days we know about before yesterday gives rise to the conclusion that the sun has always come up and will continue to come up every day, even though this cannot be logically inferred from the known instances. Note, this example will not work for our readers at the North Pole. Contrast, deductive logic. From the book Plato and a Platypus Walk into a Bar by Thomas Cathcart and Daniel Klein.
Smiling with the rising sun, living
WTFR.
Make a fool of forget. I saw a ton of bricks that hit me in the head. And watch you do, little baby, I ain't over it yet. Every time I see you, make me feel so fine. Heart beating crazy, my blood running wild. Love and make me feel like a mighty, mighty man. Love me, baby, I ain't on your mind. I'm a love struck baby. Yeah, I'm a love struck baby. You got me love struck baby.
And we are back. And I was just playing an audio before the break about vegans and how they're anti-human, having a little bit of a chat in the chat with Set Free about these people and how they feel about fur, and just they really don't get it. And I said back to him, I said, these are the people that used to hurl the red paint at people for wearing fur. Imagine doing that in the Arctic. I mean, like, and he wrote back, they wouldn't last long trying to kill or freeze people to death. Yeah, these people are just, they're so removed, so amputated from nature that, I mean, seriously, what is throwing paint going to do? The coat is the coat already. The animal's not there anymore. Hopefully the meat has been used for something. The bones, hopefully the entire animal has been utilized in some way and given reverence. But throwing paint on it, that just defiles the gift that was given. I mean, these people are just... they're out there. They're sick. You know, they're really suffering. But a lot of them are make other people suffer, and that is a problem. So one of the things I like to talk about on this show is not so much that, you know, I don't know if we want to have these people near us in a certain way because they are crazy, but just to know that this is where this is coming from. This is a malnutritive mental illness. So, Sean, you wanted to say something. You said you wanted to come on and mention something. What do you have to share with us?
Yeah, great show so far, Tabs. Enjoying it immensely. What I wanted to say was these people kept on that clip, that very audio clip we just played, they kept saying that they're misanthropes. But that what they're saying is not a misanthrope. A misanthrope does not hate people psychotically where they want people raped or killed. I'm a misanthrope myself. I don't like people in general because of the state of affairs that we are in. So it's sort of like that saying that goes, I'm not a racist. I hate people equally. Now, I don't necessarily hate people. A misanthrope is the definition of misanthrope has been raped by these psychotics that we were just listening to. Mm. What it is, it's that because the state of affairs that we are in on the world today, we tend to stay away from people in general and just keep to ourselves. That's what a misanthrope is. It's sort of like, I don't want to get to know anyone else. What I want to do is remotely try and fix the world so that I can start liking people again, so that I can start getting out and being more social again. These people that keep saying they're misanthropes, no, they're not misanthropes. The ones that we were just listening to, they're psychotic. They're asking for rape and anal rape of men. This is not something a misanthrope does. They're just they're abusing the word misanthrope just as people abuse the word racist. For instance, the definition of racist in a dictionary at one stage before it was raped by the kikes, by the Jews. What happens is racist just sort of meant you can define the differences between each race and want to preserve your own, and you can also define the superiorities and the inferiorities between those races. But of course now our Oxford dictionaries are all changing to suit a political correct realm. Well, this is the same with the definition of misanthrope. Whilst I do not like to meet many people these days because of the sad state of affairs we are in and because of their political correctness, that makes me a misanthrope. I've got a select few friends that agree with what I'm saying and I stick to them. that's what a misanthrope is, or at least that's what the definition was at one stage before, you know, the nasties got their hands on it, in parentheses, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yeah, but these people, sure, what, they're claiming to be misanthropes. No, they're psychotic, Tabs.
Yeah, definitely. I'm even seeing here at Merriam-Webster, it's saying it's originally someone who was a bitter critic of society who chooses exile over contact with other people, not someone who's wishing, you know, rape on people. I mean,
exactly,
those people were, yeah, psychotic, sick. Yeah. I mean, plenty of people are a bit isolated, but they're not going around like wishing that people, just random people, get raped to the point where they never forget it. I mean, that's sick.
It really is. You're absolutely right. That's psychotic. You know, I've got 15 dictionaries. Some of them I've left with my brother. I hope he's kept them. And some of them I've left with my mother. And I've got three here. And you can find you can see the differences in words. I read the dictionary a lot. If anybody wants to know one of the best books in the world, read the dictionary back to front and front to back. It really is fascinating. It really is, yeah. And what happens is, and I'll get off in a moment, let you continue the show, because I know that you've got things that you want to do. But when I read the different definitions throughout the different years, through those three dictionaries, I'm sort of like, you can see how they're trying to change it, just as they've been trying to change, just as they change our politics. And, you know, when it comes to these drag queens and everything like that, and we're starting to accept drag queens really reading to our children in libraries, they're changing our dictionaries and encyclopedias as well. And this is why I trust anecdotal evidence more. Always experience everything you possibly can for yourself. Tabitha, thanks for having me on, and great show.
Oh, you're welcome, Sean. Thank you. And yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, the language is a slow seepage or seeping in of stuff that gets people to kind of evolve for stuff. The two that I think about that have changed have been how the word queer used to mean bizarre, unusual, odd, weird, and the word gay used to mean happy. And now both of those words, one that formerly meant bizarre and one that formerly meant happy, now they're both have been co-opted by the homosexual agenda. So, you know, the homosexual movement, whatever you want to call it, trans. Sometimes I just think, is it LGBTQAI+? I saw a note that I had made to myself today where it said LGBTQIAV+, like veganism was part of the old LGBTP, because it pretty much is. It's so crazy.
LGBTQHIV.
QIAV. Lesbian, gay, bi, transgender.
You can do the HIV thing too. LGBTQHIV. There was sorry to break in on your show, but
it's okay.
there was when we were working for Oracle, they had this dude on called HV, and he was a homosexual. And then what happened is Jimmy and I started calling him HIV instead. Anyway, go ahead, Tabs.
Yeah, but yeah, definitely. I mean, that's an easy one right there, just to put the I in the middle. But yeah, what is it? I think it's lesbian, gay, bi, transgender, queer, intersex, androgynous, vegan. I think, yeah, I mean, keeping up with these terms, this is a new language. I have to learn something else besides English if I want to keep up with these, all these phrases, all these genders. It's just maddening. And the whole idea of a gender, by the way, that is such a Jewish construct. There's sex on your license, on your birth certificate, sex, male, female. A male is a man, a female is a woman. Gender studies done in under a minute, right? But according to these, you know, these Jews and these libtards and all these people, there's like 6 million genders out there. It's just absolutely ridiculous. It's just this leeway for them to have this social construct. Whenever anything is a social construct, well, that means it could be 5, 6, 7 million things. That's the way a social construct works. Or it can go the opposite way, like race, and doesn't exist at all. So we live in a world where there's no such thing as race, but there's millions of genders. I mean, if that isn't Zaghi, I don't know what is. Speaking of Zaghi, there's a new tranny meat in town. So we've seen tranny beef, we've seen tranny chicken, and now we have tranny pork. And that's going to be in the form of sausage, like, you know, a breakfast sausage patty. And also the tranny pork agenda is rolling into China where most of the pork, or 50% of the pork in the world, is consumed, because the Chinese diet uses pork in a lot of things, seasoning and so many things you wouldn't think have pork in it, like let's say shrimp toast, for example, has pork fat or something like that. So they're really trying to move this further. So back to what I said at the beginning of the show about them not pushing this stuff on China, I can see now that they actually are pushing it on China. So Impossible, that's one of these tranny makers. It's the one that's worse for your health. There's Impossible and Beyond. They're both terrible. Impossible is more terrible. So Impossible Sausage Croissant Witch, and a croissant witch is a croissant breakfast sandwich, is coming to Burger King. And I think this is here in the States. And it has vegan sausage and vegan pork. Impossible Foods has proven that it can create a plant-based meat that looks, cooks, and tastes just like beef. And now it's out to do the same thing with pork. Of course, because I want to basically slowly, and I've been saying this for like a year, ever since I started broadcasting, I've been following this whole tranny food agenda. And I said in a year ago, that they were going to be transitioning all fast takeaway meats to tranny meats. And I think that I was spot on when I said that. So the vegan pork looks and tastes just like real pork, and it's gluten-free. So they're really pushing this on people. And like I had talked about with Mike on the show over the weekend, they want people who aren't necessarily vegan or, you know, into that type of, you know, plant-based, whatever ideology it may be. They want just regular run-of-the-mill people, just your regular average American, maybe someone who kind of leans more to the right and still doesn't know what's going on, because a lot of these people don't know what's going on, whether they lean left or right, whatever. It's just a category. But they want these people. They want these people who eat meat, who think all this plant-based stuff is a bunch of zogwash. They're looking to convert these people. That's what this is about. So people like in China, they don't take to veganism. They don't give a hoot about veganism at all. But they're going to slowly but surely take away their meat from them. And this was supposedly a big conspiracy theory a while ago, right? This was a tinfoil hat type of thing that, oh yeah, they're taking away the meat from us. No, they actually are. They definitely are. The plant-based pork category is currently worth $130 million and makes up 1% of the $12.7 billion fresh pork and sausage market in America. So that really isn't that much, just 1%, but I'm sure they want this to grow, definitely. And here in this article, they're talking about Burger King to also do a trial of this Impossible pork for, I guess, one of their sandwiches. They're looking to make some bratwurst and Italian sausages. And of course, here's what they're doing. Just like I talked earlier about people being obsessed with calories and macronutrients and all that stuff, it doesn't matter to anybody in nature. They would laugh in your face if you actually asked how many calories or fat grams is in something. Here they are telling us the pork will be lower in calories than conventional pork, 220 to 350. It will contain 13 grams of fat compared to 32, 7 grams of saturated fat versus 11 in conventional pork, and it's cholesterol free. Yeah, that's what we want, cholesterol free. This is all so inverted. It's so insidious, and we've been under these lies for, well, nearly a decade, ever since White War II or World War II. They've been pushing this really, really hard. It wasn't bad enough what they did during that war. They had to further devitalize us after that war had harmed and hurt and killed so many people. When it comes to protein, it's about the same as regular pork, but the sodium content is higher, 420 grams, so just 80 in pork. So it's definitely something that you don't want to be eating. And of course, they're touting it as something that's good. They never tell you that it's GMO and has a host of other deleterious ingredients, because they want to sell you on all these ridiculous things that mean nothing, telling you about all the macronutrients and telling you that it's cholesterol free. Like, that's a boon. Absolutely pathetic. Don't fall for it, though. Ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous. So that's all I wanted to say about that story, the tranny pork. Yep. So now I think I will go and play the last audio. This is also from Veganphobic, and this is a little clip about B12. And B12 is one of those things that gets a fair amount of hot debate in the community, in the vegan carnivore community. People have been talking about B12 for years. When I grew up, it was always one of those things that, you know, being mostly, I guess, vegetarian on a macrobiotic diet, we still were not vegetarian, but most of our food was overall from a percentage perspective. However, we did always eat fish and eggs, and we always believed that we had to eat those foods because of the B12. And I still believe that. This whole vegan B12 soil thing is a bunch of hogwash. Then you see a lot of these people who basically will shoot themselves with a little syringe thing, like someone would use if they were doing steroids, anabolic steroids, or, you know, utilizing opioids like heroin, and they have to give themselves a B12 injection because their diet is garbage and it's completely absent of many nutrients. They have to give themselves this shot in order for them to not get ill, or just to get by with being borderline ill. And the guy in this little clip, it's only about a minute. His name is Dr. John McDougall. This is someone that the other network, or shall I say the enemy network, touts as being this this great doctor who is a vaccine pusher, number one. Number two, he promotes a diet for pregnant women that consists of just potatoes. And in this clip we're going to play, you can see he still has no idea about B12. And he's been a vegan doctor for years, or whatever he does, and he still says the debate on B12, he can't figure it out. So, Sean, whenever you're ready, please play this clip.
Tabs, you didn't give me that one. You gave me four
clips.
Oh,
fiddlesticks.
Yeah.
Okay.
You gave me the last one we've got. Let's here see. Is the vegan diet dangers. You didn't give me that
Do
one.
Do I have that one? Oh, no, that's it. It's in that clip. It's after the anti-human one. It's just, I was calling it MacDougall because it was the last tidbit of that audio, but I think you got the right one.
Okay, did you want me to play the full 6 minutes? I mean, you've got time to do so, or did you want me to just take it to a certain time?
We can do the full 6 minutes, sure. Why not?
Okay, all right.
Okay, so are vegans supplementing their diet, or are they substituting their diet? They took the word supplement and they performed a different behavior. Rather than taking the pills in addition to the nutrients they're already supposed to be getting from food groups, they just completely removed the food group and substitute it with a pill. So what I wonder is, how confident are they in these supplements to where they're willing to substitute food groups with it? And at what point does this plan for substitution become starvation? Because I know that there's a common sense that people will not remove all their food and eat purely supplements. And why is that? Why won't people, or let's just say, why won't vegans remove all the apples, all the plants, all the nuts, the seeds, the seaweeds, and just purely write those lists of nutrients down and take those supplements? Why not? What's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with it, right? That should be an okay plan. That should make sense. Because when you get your blood test back, as long as you took those pills, it should reflect on your blood test, and you shouldn't even need to eat any more food, right? So, is it any better between the meat, whether you remove all but one nutrient or removing all nutrients, or is it just either a lesser or greater degree of the same amount of starvation? So what I mean by that is, if I just have B12 that I'm removing from my diet, foods that contain B12, and I say, I'll just take the supplement, it doesn't matter. Is that okay? What's the magic number? Okay, well, let's say we're just gonna do B12. let's take out foods now that contain vitamin D in it. Okay, so we're going to do B12 and D. Is that okay? What about iodine? We're going to start adding in iodine supplements too. We're going to do iodine, B12, D. What about collagen? Well, I'm not getting collagen from my diet, so I should do four now. I should do four. Okay, let's see. DHA. Okay, I'm going to do 5 supplement pills. EPA. Okay, I'm going to do 6. I'm going to do DHA, EPA, B12D, collagen, K2. Crap, let me see. I want to get K2, and I'm not getting enough of fermented food. So, I know vegans who take K2. Let's just replace K2 as well. In fact, why stop there? Why not just... Wait, A? Oh, we could just do beta-carotene? Okay, well, we'll take a supplement... A, vitamin A, so that we don't have to eat that form of vitamin A. It'll actually just be beta carotene supplements. So what I'm getting at is, what number do we get to before we get to the difference of the absurdity of removing all your foods and just eating all supplements, or even reduce, or even removing one food group and replacing it with a supplement? If you disagree with removing all your food, why do you even agree with removing one of your foods? Is it because you can get away with it longer? Or, like, fundamentally, there's an inconsistency in that behavior. And that's why there's a disagreement on when people say veganism is starvation. I think that's the disconnect. And some people just don't get it. Or maybe I'm crazy. And the response they will say is, well, meat eaters take supplements too. Yes, because they are supplementing it. They're not substituting their diet. And when they are taking supplements, why are they taking supplements? Are they taking supplements because they chose to completely eradicate a food group from their diet? Or do they have a health issue? It makes sense. If you need to take a supplement, take a supplement. But don't put yourself in a situation to need to take a supplement, because that doesn't make any sense. So really, supplements are just an ethical argument in order to make you feel better about starving yourself. Because if it's not starving yourself, then why do they, or why would anyone, disagree with removing all their food and putting in all supplements? Can somebody tell me where my thinking is going wrong? Because it seems to make too much sense to me, but I might be missing something.
But I reserve my right to change my opinion about medications, including supplements, which in my mind are medications. And B12 is something I've been wrestling with for almost 40 years now. And I have to tell you, I don't have it completely settled. Right now, I think it's fair for you to believe what I say in terms of you ought to take a B12 supplement. But if you hear me speaking a little differently about it, it's because the science still isn't completely clear. There's research that has been done that I'm still looking at, and there's research still to be done about the best way to get B12, what kind you should get, methyl hydroxy, cyano, how much you should take, whether you should take pills at all, whether you should get it from algae or, there's still a lot of questions out there, but I believe you're safe just taking a non-animal source of B12 for now until I get my confusion settled.
If you haven't settled it in the past 40 years, John, I don't know if we're going
to... There's just, for one thing, it just sets wrong to me to have to be able to have to take any isolated concentrated nutrient to fix a good diet. That just doesn't sit right with me, never has, but...
So for 40 years, this guy hasn't been able to figure out if B12 is the real deal or not, and he's recommending pretty much synthetic supplements at this point until he figures it out. I mean, that sounds pretty zoggy right there. That sounds like he really has his doubts about his regime. And a lot of these low-fat, plant-based, high-carb diets, a lot of them will still even recommend, Like, I think the Pritikin diet used to do this. This is one that was popular during the low-fat 90s, late 80s, early 90s, that type of time, that you should still supplement with a little bit of fish. So they're admitting that the diet has holes, and depending on many factors, certain people will feel it a lot quicker than other people based on their health, based on their nutritional needs, based on their blood. There's so many factors, and diet is not a one size fits all thing. It's not. You have to take into consideration age, race, sex, blood type, sub race, you know, things like that. Like if we're talking about European people, what would be more appropriate for an Italian person versus a British person, you know, versus someone who's Nordic? I mean, that's going to be different too. I mean, some people who are, you know, racialist LARPers like to believe that we're all supposed to eat the same, just like we're all the same, right? And just like how animals are equal to us, right? Which is all about just giving us animal rights. Animal rights isn't about giving animals rights. It's about giving us animal rights. And our enemies are always using it in a way that makes it sound like we're doing something good, like we're being compassionate. It's not about that. They're using that against us. And one of the big facets of this vegetabilist agenda is to use our emotions, to use our compassion against us. And that's what they have been doing. People fall for it. Don't fall for it. So that was all I pretty much wanted to say on that B12. But gee whiz, what zogwash. It's unbelievable right there, right? And of course, if you want to have B12 in your diet, just eat a little, just, you know, eat a little bit of fish or meat. You can be fine with that depending on what you like, what works for you. Everyone finds a sweet spot with that. Sometimes you might need to have more of something in the beginning to kind of feed your body, especially if you've had been malnourishing yourself for a while. Oftentimes we malnourish ourselves not even knowing that we're doing it, thinking that we're being virtuous and good the entire time. And oftentimes it's the opposite of that. So yeah, I mean, work with it, see what works for you. And like I said earlier, have fun with it. Don't get too caught up in all these things about, you know, calories and macronutrients and I ate something that was bad and now I have to do this. Just enjoy it and eat real food. The more real food you eat, the less likely you'll be tempted by snacks and chips and crackers and candies and cookies or whatever you have proclivity for. You'll be far less likely to be snacking on those things if you're eating a nutrient-rich diet. Or if you do find yourself snacking, you'll find yourself snacking on stuff that's a lot better for you. You won't be reaching for stuff that isn't good for you. And there are a lot of snacks out there that are very processed, very unhealthy, and expensive too. And you know, who wants to support a lot of these companies that are pro all these crazy things now? I mean, if you boycotted every product out there, you'd probably be naked and starving. I mean, I get it. I mean, draw the line somewhere, but we could always make a better choice with things. And there is a list somewhere that I've seen. It's like a picture of all the products that are made and used for hell, or Israel, some people call it. So that would be a good primer to say, oh, you know, I want to take these things out of my diet. I don't want to, you know, support these companies, whatever it be, whether it be food, whether it be, you know, the other things you get at the store, like toiletries and stuff like that. But not buying stuff from use for hell is a good start. For sure. So we just got about a minute or so before we roll into the commercial, but I want to talk a little bit about high cholesterol, because this is something that vegans are always touting. Like, I think that man in that video, the one who was anti-human, was talking about how he wanted people to get high cholesterol and die of heart disease or stroke. Oftentimes you'll see people on YouTube wishing that type of stuff on people who eat meat. And they like to refer to people who eat meat, whether it's someone who eats a piece of fish every Sunday or it's someone who eats meat at every meal. They like to refer to these people as carnists. That's the word that they use in their debate. So I use the word vegetableist because it sounds, I don't know, sounds like it makes sense. Yeah. So higher cholesterol is associated with a longer life, not a shorter life. Why do you think so many people end up dying and getting health problems from taking Lipitor? Lipitor is a very popular drug, especially here in the States. It is a drug that helps in triple parentheses, helps lower cholesterol. Okay, we'll be right back with the rest.
The basic thesis of Sun Tzu's The Art of War is to try overcome the enemy by wisdom, not by force alone. Sun Tzu believed that a military struggle was not only a competition between military forces, but also a comprehensive conflict embracing politics, economics, military force, and diplomacy. The attitude of Sun Tzu towards war is one of extreme prudence, earnestness, and seriousness. He said, "War is a matter of vital importance to the state, a matter of life or death, the road either to survival or to ruin. Hence, it is imperative that it be studied thoroughly." The Art of War by Sun Tzu.
Remember the way that you love me. Time of day, and that's a cold shadow.
We are back, and I was just chatting a little bit about high cholesterol, and there's a lot of Zogwash propaganda about cholesterol, and Lipitor is the number one pharmaceutical, at least here in America. They want everyone, or at least 50% of the populace over the age of 40, on their death drug. And the number two drug, the pharmaceutical in America, I think, is one for blood pressure. So here is a little bit about this article. Higher cholesterol is associated with longer life, which is counterintuitive to all the stuff, or most of the stuff, you've probably heard with the mainstream or lamestream medicine. And here is what this says. Is it possible that mainstream, lamestream medicine got cholesterol all wrong? Well, it certainly is, because they've been lying about this since the 1940s. That not only does cholesterol have no connection to heart disease, but that high cholesterol is actually a good thing? Yes, it's more than possible. Here, I'll show some evidence that higher cholesterol is associated with a longer life. All-cause mortality versus heart disease. Obviously, people die from many causes, whether it be natural, such as heart disease, cancer, infection, or unnatural, such as from a homicide, a suicide, or an accident. Should we be concerned about what cause we die from? Yes and no. On one hand, you're dead, no matter what. On the other hand, dying in your sleep of old age may be preferable to a long, lingering illness. Nevertheless, from a public health standpoint, it seems a mistake to focus on changing something that lowers the risk of death from one cause, only to raise the risk from another. While total cholesterol is a poor, if not utterly worthless, risk marker for heart disease, doctors have found on it to the exclusion of how it might affect other causes of death. It does you little good to save yourself from heart disease if it means that you increase your risk of death from cancer. All-cause mortality, death from anything, is the most appropriate measure to use when looking at risk factors. And older people with higher cholesterol live longer. Population studies in Japan show that people of all ages with higher cholesterol live longer. Overall, an inverse trend is found in Japan between all-cause mortality and total cholesterol levels. Mortality is highest in the lowest cholesterol group without exception. If limited to elderly people, the trend is universal. As discussed in Section 2, elderly people with the highest cholesterol levels have the highest survival rates irrespective of where they live in the world. Consider the chart above, taken from the paper, and they're just showing serum total cholesterol levels based for male and female. It shows all-cause mortality by cholesterol levels, men on the left, women on the right. Current guidelines call for keeping cholesterol at 200 mg/dl or lower, yet higher levels meant lower death rates. What about outside Japan? The following chart shows cumulative all-cause mortality of people older than 85 in Leiden, the Netherlands, by cholesterol level. The cohort with the average cholesterol of 252 mg/dl, the highest, had the lowest death rates. The following shows data from elderly people in Finland. Those with cholesterol greater than 232 mg/dl had the lowest death rates. The data from Japan is for all ages. The data from outside Japan is for the elderly. What about the data for all ages outside of Japan? The authors believe that the presence of people with familial hypercholesterolemia, which causes a very high cholesterol level and which raises the risk of death, is the highest in the highest cholesterol categories, accounts for higher death rates in those categories. So that's basically a congenital issue right there. They also argue that cholesterol levels in that disorder are not the cause of increased death rates. A recent review in the prominent medical journal BMJ regarding LDL cholesterol, the risk marker considered most significant, found either no association or an inverse association between LDL and death rates. High LDL-C is inversely associated with mortality in most people over 60 years. This finding is inconsistent with the cholesterol hypothesis, for example, that cholesterol, particularly LDL-C, is inherently atherogenic. Since elderly people with high LDL-C live as long or longer than those with low LDL-C, our analysis provides reasons to question the validity of cholesterol hypothesis. Moreover, our study provides the rationale for a re-evaluation of guidelines recommending pharmacological reduction of LDL-C in the elderly as a component of cardiovascular disease preventative strategies. The Honolulu Heart Program was the first of studies to find this inverse relation between total cholesterol and death rates in the elderly people aged 71 to 93. It found that compared to the lowest quartile, fourth, of cholesterol level, increasing quartiles of cholesterol had cholesterol at 28%, 40%, and 35%, decreased death rates respectively. Furthermore, the Honolulu study seems to provide evidence that actually raising cholesterol is protective since, quote, only the group with low cholesterol concentration at both examinations had a significant association with mortality. So is high cholesterol protective? Why would people with low cholesterol die at a higher rate than those with high? Several things could be going on. Cholesterol may protect against infections and atherosclerosis. Cholesterol may protect against cancer. A strong association was found between low cholesterol and violence. Interesting, because the vegan diet is usually a cholesterol-free diet, and you see a lot of psychotic and violent behavior. Odds ratio of violence for cholesterol, less than 180 mg/dl, was 15.495, it says. Yeah, so interesting to think about that. And think of how the typical meal that you get inside of a facility, like a correctional behavioral facility, like a prison or something to that effect that could possibly be for juveniles as well. They're probably giving them the lowest quality diet, full of all, quote, you know, triple parenthesis, quote, heart healthy oils, which are terrible for them. Probably all low cholesterol, high carbohydrate, making these people even sicker and crazy than they are. It's a good way to churn out crazy, disordered people by giving them food like this, especially when they're in a facility like that trying to get better or, you know, assuming to. Several studies have found an association between low cholesterol and suicide. Oh, that could be another reason why they push all this on us. So they want us to off ourselves. That's the easiest thing. They push an agenda on us. We off ourselves. They swap their hands together back and forth and they say, good job. For instance, one study found that those in the lowest quartile, fourth of cholesterol concentration, had more than six times a risk of suicide than those in the highest quartile. That is pretty serious if your diet is making you think of ending it. The conclusion of this article. A number of studies have found that at least in people older than 60, high cholesterol is associated with lower death rates. This fact casts considerable doubt on the cholesterol hypothesis of heart disease, which is total and complete zogwash. I will go into that in more depth on a future show. Why, with so much evidence against it, does the cholesterol theory still have so much traction? To quote the authors in the first cited study, it's all about the money. And of course it is, because they can monetize sugar and make all these things out of sugar and get us to buy them and get us addicted. We believe the answer is very simple. For the side defending this so-called cholesterol theory, the amount of money at stake is too much to lose the fight. And that is the end of the article right there. So that seems to be a husky or a weighted agenda right there that a lot of people aren't familiar with. And it's time to shed some light on that type of stuff. Yeah, definitely. So I hope that if that was news to anybody, I hope that was important that you, or I hope that was informative. It is important that you heard it. But yeah, I mean, so many of these things are just not spoken about, or they're shrouded, or all these other things are pushed. And you know, with all the money that's put into this, think about how much money right now is being funneled into this vegan agenda, right? How much money? It must be a mind-boggling amount of money that's being pushed into this in all different ways, in all different avenues that they're pushing this. So if you can follow the money, you can usually figure out that this is an agenda. When you're talking about good, natural, easy stuff, you don't have an agenda. Besides maybe thinking that your agenda is that you want people to be healthier, to be optimized, you know, it's not about selling a product or making, you know, all this money from, you know, zogriculture. It's about showing people the right way, which oftentimes it's not something that is going to be something you could market. You can't market showing people the right way. It's just about, hey, this is what you do. This is natural. Our ancestors did this, and this is how we do it. And that's it. Simple. So that's all I wanted to say about high cholesterol. I will be talking about cholesterol in general on future shows, but there is only so much I can cover in 2 hours per week on the broadcast, and then, of course, with the tidbits as well. So to switch gears a little bit, we just have a little bit of time left for the show this evening. That went rather quickly. I wanted to talk a little bit about bile. And that would be the bile that is in the body, one of the fluids of the body that we need for our digestion. And how altered bile acid metabolism, and how that happens to vegetarians. This is very interesting, because one of the things that people realize when they're on these vegetableless diets or high vegetableless diets, and don't forget that the SAD diet, the standard American diet that, well, many of us grew up on, many of us still eat today in some way, shape, or form. You know, it's all a journey. We're always evolving and optimizing every day. If we mess up, we always have a chance to be better and to learn from that mistake. That's how I see it. I see it as a journey. It isn't just like, that's it, I'm vegan, and that's it. Like, all bets are off. Like, that's sick. Obviously, we know that's sick. But one of the main reasons that a lot of people get away from vegetableism is because their digestion is so messed up. And I played a clip last week that was all about vegans and bloating and just some people go into the hospital, the bloating and pain were so bad from having all these anti-nutrients, all these basically foreign foods, these modernized foods in the system causing all different types of dastardly effects. So this is an article that says, bile acid kinetics were studied in a group of healthy vegetarians and a matched group of healthy control subjects. The daily fractional turnover of folic acid was significantly smaller in vegetarians than in the controls, and the deoxycholic acid pool size was slightly significantly smaller in the vegetarians than the controls. The data suggests that enterohepatic conservation, of folic acid is more efficient in vegetarians than in control subjects, resulting in decreased deoxycholic acid input in vegetarian subjects. The possible significance of these data is to intestinal octogenesis is discussed. So I think that kind of works in with other stuff that I know. And this was something that I got stuck on for a while, and especially with the push of all these fancy waters, like drinking alkalized water, drinking distilled water. And oftentimes those waters are kind of touted in these health communities. And what that does is that when you eat a lot of these foods that aren't really natural for your system, you're already messing with your digestion. You're messing with your bile acid metabolism. You're messing with all of these things. And not only that, if you're going to be drinking these waters that are alkaline, that's going to further be weakening your stomach acid. You don't want to have an alkaline stomach, because people who have low stomach acid, they're the ones that have issue digesting their food in the first place. So you want to keep a good amount of acid, not so much or in a horrific way where it ends up becoming acid reflux. Of course, that happens from eating the wrong foods, or just there's a lot of reasons why that would happen to somebody. But the last thing you want to do is eat all these foods that are loaded with anti-nutrients and then drink these waters that are either distilled or alkaline, because then you're really going to be cutting any acid out of your stomach. And if you're eating all these hard to digest foods, you're going to need all the acid you can get. That's why a lot of people who have been on these diets for a long time, they eat all of these digestive enzymes, which smell horrific, by the way. It smells like a sweat sock, like a nasty gym sweat sock. Digestive enzymes. They're very expensive too, or they're constantly taking something, some type of herb, some type of, you know, bitters formulas, you know, bubbly water, whatever. They're always constantly pickles. They're constantly trying to, some alcohol sometimes, they're constantly trying to settle their stomach because they've messed themselves up by taking all these foods with all these anti-nutrients and taking all these precautions to lower their stomach acid. If they were eating a normal diet, well, they wouldn't be dealing with this and they wouldn't be lowering their stomach acid. I thought for a while that I had a low stomach acid, and I don't think I did. I think I was just eating these zogged out foods and following this ridiculous advice about alkaline water, and that was what was causing me issue. And these traps are very easy to fall into when they tout it as, like, you know, healthy, clean, all that type of stuff. I don't necessarily know what a sweat sock smells like, but this thing just reeked. I could just imagine that it would smell like a sweat sock, or just the way a gym locker room would smell. It was just nasty. Imagine the stinkiest cheese you could imagine that was in a sweat sock that was like hanging out like in a locker. That's what it smelled like. And people are actually eating these things for digestion, and they're paying like $60 for this darn big box of it, or this big bottle of it. Ridiculous. And I'm not a big supplement person either. I used to take quite a bit more when I was younger before I realized I was just paying for expensive urine. I don't do too much of that anymore. I just keep it simple. Like right now, what I'm taking supplement wise, I ran out of my polyrachis ant, which was my, you know, my ant pills that I like to take for my zinc. So right now I'm just taking a probiotic and cod liver oil. That's it. I keep it simple. You know, I get most of my stuff from food, and that works way better for me than just like that fellow was saying in that video, like basically making like a supplement, like basically making your diet a supplement regime, like taking all these different things. I mean, it's so much money too to buy all that stuff and then deal with it taxing your liver. And then you're taking 10 things at once. You're wondering, is this causing this reaction in my body? Is this doing this? You never even know what's working in the first place. It's just, it's a ridiculous wheel to be on, but it's easy to get onto it because you always kind of keep on thinking something's going to be good, something's going to be helpful. And I guess we kind of fall into that trap of salvation. Something's going to help me. Something's going to save me. Something's going to protect me. And that could kind of be an Abrahamic onlay onto us. I mean, you really can only save yourself. So I am watching the chat room, and I am giggling while I talk. So yeah, you guys caught me. All right. So we only have a little bit of time left. Let's see what else. This is actually a very good article. And this highlights all the nutrients that one would, not be gaining access to if they were eating a limited diet, eating a vegan diet, something like that. So here, this is very interesting for people. I think this is wonderful information that we should all know, especially if, you know, if someone's going to debate you. Maybe people just don't know. I mean, a lot of times these people who regurgitate this vegetableist ideology to you, they just heard it somewhere and they're just, you know, sticking a spoon in their mouth and then just trying to stick it into your mouth, essentially, so you eat the same slop that they have already eaten. So this is from a blog I found called The Sweet Beet. Are there risks to a vegan diet? And here is how it goes. Last week, I nearly went vegan. This is how it happened. I practice yoga. Many yogis are vegan. Enlightenment and tempeh are a common pairing. Of course, we know from prior audios that I've played that vegan diet has something to do with enlightenment. It has to do with malnutrition. Real enlightenment comes from eating real food that feeds the spiritual body and the physical body and the mental body and all of the bodies, the 10 bodies. My teacher is my own personal manifestation of Buddha, sent me to help. My teacher is my own personal manifestation of Buddha, sent to me to help settle my mind and lengthen my hamstrings. Okay. Her poses are bold yet effortless. Her tone is firm yet compassionate, and the dime-sized tattoo on her inside of her forearm, understandably rebellious. But when she announced she was going vegan, my first reaction was, well, then sign me up. But then I returned to my earthly self and decided not to. Though animal products play a supporting role in my diet, they play a critical one. First off, let's separate the ethical, moral rationale from the nutritional one. Yes, most factory farms are despicable. Absolutely. And I think it's honorable to reject these practices, as do I. But if you are not eating animal products because of inhumane treatment of living creatures, there are farms that raise animals with care and slaughter them with dignity. The animals are drug-free and run around like animals do. So then, the nutritional argument. Many people go vegan to detox, and you'll see a lot of videos of how people have detoxed their hair, their teeth. Their version of detox is a little off. I am 100% for detoxing by eliminating sugar, processed foods, refined grains, dairy if someone is lactose intolerant, and alcohol, though I think the occasional drink is essential for mental health, if not digestive. But I don't believe there is anything about fish, in particular the small ones that are low in mercury, or pasture-raised animals and their eggs that our bodies find toxic. And that is true. We have been eating animals and their offspring quite healthfully for hundreds of thousands of years. And in fact, physiologically, our digestive system appears to be more like a dog, who is a carnivore, than a cow, who is a herbivore. Lactose intolerance, yes. Gluten intolerance, yes. Nut allergies, for sure. Soy allergies, yes. But meat allergies, some people may find it doesn't suit them, but I have never heard of a, quote, true meat allergy. The biggest challenge that I would be concerned about with a strict and long-term vegan diet is that there are critical vitamins and minerals that could not easily be consumed in adequate amounts. Not just easily consumed in adequate amounts, not in the best or the most soluble form. Like we talked about a couple of weeks ago, how only 5% or something like that of the calcium in spinach was available in it, and how it's rife with oxalic acid, which can contribute to kidney stones and other bad things in the body. So here are the nutrients that you could really only get from animal foods. And they say you can get them from other things too. Sure, you can, but they are more bioavailable in animal foods. So we want to maximize the foods that offer us bioavailability. It doesn't mean that you have to give up vegetables and stuff like that. There are better vegetables than certain ones, but it's always keen to eat foods or eat the best source that maximizes bioavailability. That's what it's about. So the first one is vitamin A. The direct form is only found in animal products, meat, egg, dairy. Though much less so than meat and fish, vitamin A is found in orange and green vegetables is beta carotene, which the body must first convert to the usable form of vitamin A. That conversion requires bile salts, which are produced by your liver when you consume fat. making fat essential on a vegan diet. So yes, you can obtain a version of vitamin A in plants, but you'll need about 6 times as much beta carotene to equal the amount found direct in vitamin A. And it's a different form, of course, too, like the article says. B12. This is a nutrient which vegans can potentially become deficient, as you only get this from animal products. There are 8 different B vitamins, and our body needs them all. It can take time for the implications of low B12 to show up, with anemia being the most common outcome of very low levels. Vitamin D. This is another one found only in animal products. Cod liver oil is super high in it, as is shrimp, wild salmon, sardines, full fat dairy products, and egg yolks. Yes, you can get it from the sun, but most of us don't spend 15 minutes a day flesh exposed, palms up. Furthermore, the darker your skin, the less D your body will produce. And of course, those of us living in the north, I'm someone who fits into that category, we don't get a lot of sun this time of year. Certain days, we don't get really any sun. It's, of course, lighter out during the AM hours, but we don't get a lot of sun. And one of the best sources of vitamin D, I'll just insert this, they say egg yolks right here. Duck egg yolks are one of the best sources of vitamin D. Protein. You can get some of the components of protein, like amino acids, from legumes, seeds, and grains, but meat and fish contain complete protein, meaning they have all the essential amino acids. The amino acids in meat and fish are also in a form that is very easy to digest for most people. Many people find that grains and legumes, which contain digestive inhibitors, are quite hard to digest. Note, too, how little meat you actually need to get protein. A 4-ounce piece of beef provides 30 grams, salmon 25 grams, but tofu has 8. And tofu is processed, too. Most tofu is very processed. I'm not wholly against tofu, but it really shouldn't be the crux of one's diet. Use it the way Asians do. Don't make a pie with it. Don't make frosting with it. Don't make ice cream with it. Add a couple of cubes to a soup, something like that. You know, use soy sauce. Use miso. Use shoyu. Eat natto. Eat tempeh. But don't make it the huge piece of your meal, because they never did that in the Orient. That's a perverted idea that's come over here, where a couple of cubes and tofu in a soup become analogous to a steak, and that's not the way it's supposed to be. Zinc. In red meat is high in it, and it comes in any form that many believe is easier for the body to break down than the one that's found in grain and legumes, and more bioavailable, of course. Polyrhachis ant is one of the best sources of zinc. Zinc is essential for wound repair. So those are the nutrients that we don't get. We don't get those things from plant foods. The bioavailability is not there. So something to really to think about, you know, to think about the – when you really think about diet from a holistic perspective, you want to be whole. You want to include everything, and that includes all foods, everything. You don't shun certain things. It's just ridiculous. Seafood as well, Sean. Yeah, prawns, all types of shellfish tend to be high in zinc. That's actually higher in cholesterol too. Shellfish and stuff like that, prawns, crawfish, crab, lobster, that's actually one of the best sources of cholesterol. There is more cholesterol in shellfish and fish than there is in land meat. So it looks like we have reached the end of the broadcast for the evening. I hope that was informative, as usual. And I will be back next week. Good night, everybody.
Gym sock sniffer. Yeah, we're onto your secret now.
Well, you know I'd be insane.
Truth really is a revolutionary act these days, which makes it hard to find honest media outlets to call home. If you're looking for a network that tells it like it is and delivers information that is easy to digest, then WTFR is definitely the network for you. If you think you have what it takes to do a live broadcast or even a pre-recorded podcast, contact Sean at DESSNR@hotmail.com and he'll take a look at what you have to offer. Nothing is off the table at WTFR, whether it's the illegal occupation of Iraq and Afghanistan, 9/11, or the truth about the Israeli Mossad. You'll be able to get your information out right here. So what are you waiting for? Email Sean now at DESSNR@hotmail.com.